上的鸟儿成双对，树上的鸟儿成双对。
Good evening and welcome to A Novel Idea. This is your host, Rosemary Manchester, and you've been listening to our guest for this evening's program, An Chi Min, who's not only an extremely talented novelist, but also sings Chinese opera. And so we thought you'd like to hear An Chi herself singing as we go into the program. She will be talking about her most recent book, Pearl of China, an astonishing book about the life of Pearl Buck, seen from the point of view of a Chinese woman. And we recorded this program several days ago, and Suzanne Lang and I are live here in the studio to talk about An Chi Min and her book, Pearl of China.
Hi, Rosemary, and we are also here to invite our regular listeners of A Novel Idea to pledge their support to the station this evening during A Novel Idea. We're not going to be talking with you very long because we have this great conversation that Rosemary had with An Chi Min that we want to bring you. But if you're a regular listener and enjoy the programs we bring you every month, and next month we have a good one as well with Jan Martel, I hope you'll call and become a member of the station. And 707-2020 is the number you can call and pledge your support to the station. Rosemary, before we get to your conversation with An Chi Min, maybe you could just in a nutshell tell us how you prepare for an interview with somebody like An Chi Min.
In this instance, I was able to, I've been following the work of An Chi Min for several years. Her early works, Madame Mao and Red Azalea, and then her two books about the Chinese empresses. And so when I had the opportunity to have her come into the studio and talk about Pearl of China, I was just thrilled for the opportunity. And as you listen to our conversation, you'll learn a great deal about An Chi Min and how she developed this interest in Pearl Buck.
Well, Rosemary, I really appreciate all the work you put into the show every month, and certainly I've seen how engaged you are and how engaged authors become with you. So I think that that's something I'm sure you, our listeners, pick up on as well. And we sure appreciate your support, and we need your support right now for the local programs like A Novel Idea that we bring to you every month. Give us a call at 584-2020 and pledge your support. But now I'm going to suggest we get right to the conversation with Rosemary Manchester and An Chi Min.
I wish you could see us. An Chi and I are both wearing our beautiful Chinese jackets. I have a story I want to tell about you. When I first heard you speak, it was at the Key West Literary Seminar last year in January, and we'd had all these readings and all these discussions, and you came on the stage in the most beautiful gown I have ever seen in my life.
Yes.
Yes, yes. And with you was your equally beautiful daughter. Also beautifully dressed. How is your daughter?
She finally got to rub my nose in it. She was accepted by Stanford.
Oh, my goodness. And
she says she will never, ever want to be a writer because she saw what I'd gone through, and it's so uncool because since she was young, she would come up to my cabin and to peek into what I wrote. She would say, 3 weeks before, you are on this paragraph. 3 weeks later, you're on the same paragraph. So she decided she's going to go into medicine.
Into medicine.
Yeah, the first goal was to be a nurse. Mm-hmm. Now her teacher told her she was good enough and could take more challenge. Yes. So she's going to pursue being a doctor. Okay. And yes. she, I said, well, I think that's even harder. And she just proved to me that she got accepted at Stanford. So.
Oh, congratulations. That's wonderful. That's the best. And she is a marvelous dancer. You remember that night she danced?
Yes.
And it was just an absolutely magnificent occasion. And then you sang. You said you wanted to sing from Chinese opera. And do you remember what you said? You said, I'm not very good, but you won't know.
Right. You wouldn't know the difference. I was out of practice by Chinese tradition. You only show the perfect.
Yes.
Part of you or not.
Yes.
Yeah, I did that. And then recently I just came back from ProBuck's hometown, Zhenjiang. And I went with my daughter and I used her because just two people.
Yes.
We have to do everything together, like a cameraman, editing, directing, sounding, everything. Yes. She has also have to be the model to play the role of Willow in the video. So I put it on anqimin.com, click. Author video. I just want to show the how China is viewing Pure Buck now today, and it's in it. I show you that there the Zhenjiang is the hometown of Pure Buck.
Yes.
Is going crazy about making her into a modern goddess.
Oh.
They built Pure Buck Bridge, Pure Buck Culture Center, Pure Buck Museum, restore Pure Buck House, and they built Pure Buck Bridge. And Pure Buck Temple, like a pavilion. And I was thinking the next thing would be Pure Buck Shopping Center.
Of course, the mall.
And, yeah, that's right. The governor of Jiangsu province said, Beijing has got the Great Wall. Right. And Jiangsu province, we've got a Pure Buck.
You've got Pure Buck.
And then they for the latest news was that the Communist Party officially acknowledged Pure Buck as one of the 20 friends of China, and Pure Buck rated number 13. While Edgar Snow, who wrote
the Red Star over
China,
yes,
kind of Mao and Mao's friend,
right.
So he was rated number one.
Uh-huh.
But for Pure Buck rating number 13, it's already a first time acknowledgement officially that she is a friends of China, and the town people who went up there and accept the award, they come back, they told me they were disappointed. And I say, why are you disappointed? And the director of the Pure Buck Museum says, we don't get it. Since when she became China's friend? She's our daughter. And once our daughter married to America, she became a friend? It's not a daughter anymore? It just doesn't make sense to us.
That's a wonderful story. And tourists will be coming from all over the world to see Pure Buck's home, won't they?
Yes, I am so thrilled that next week I'm invited to a presentation at Pure Buck's house in Pennsylvania, outside of Philadelphia in Bucktown. It's going to be such a significant thing in my life.
Oh, yes.
And I'm taking my daughter.
Oh, good.
Because I feel, you know, in China, by the tradition, the peasant tradition, is that when you're so poor that you cannot afford tea to show your guest, to entertain your guest, but you always bring out your children to entertain the guest.
What a beautiful
So I
question.
Brought my daughter.
You brought your
I asked her to sing.
Yes.
And with me to at that occasion. We just can't wait to do that.
At the Key West Literary Seminar, after the singing and the dancing, you made the announcement that you were completing a new book, and it was to be about Pure Buck. And a gasp went up in the auditorium. And I was like, oh! It was like, what a great idea! And lest some people think that it was going to be something negative, you said, China loves Pure Buck. And so I've been waiting, you know, ever since a year ago, January, and when I finally got the book in my hands, A Pearl of China, it just was a wonderful occasion for me to have the book and read it. And as I read it in the beginning of the book, you told about how when you came to the United States, you didn't know about Pure Buck.
Right.
And would you tell the story about when you were doing a book signing and when the woman asked you if you knew about Pure Buck?
Okay. I give you a little background about that.
Yes, please.
Mm-hmm. I was ordered to denounce Paula's book.
Yes.
In 1971, when I was going through a Shanghai middle school. Now, by the way, and 2 days ago in the bookstore, another woman from China, from Jiangsu province, she's not from Shanghai, from Jiangsu province, she got up and said the same thing. And she was in tears. And I thought only the people like in Shanghai, I was the one. But then she was ordered to denounce Paula Buck too. So it was Madam Mao's campaign.
Yes.
From top to down to denounce Paula Buck, and the intention was to reject her visa. But Paula Buck mm-hmm. was scheduled to accompany President Nixon to
yes.
visit China in 1972.
Yes.
So it was the end of 1971, Madam Mao started this campaign to show the media, that was the intention, mm-hmm. the Western media, that it's not me, Madam Mao, who dislike Paula Buck. It's our people, even our children. Unfortunately, we just follow. We're so brainwashed. Mm-hmm. We're following the trap. So I remember having such a hard time composing the criticism because I did not know who she was. Only know she was an author, wrote a novel called Good Earth. I asked if I could be given an opportunity to read the book. And of course, they say no. The book is too toxic, too dangerous to even to be translated. So what do? I asked my principal. They say, just copy the newspaper. So I copied the newspaper that says, Paula Buck portrayed a peasant in a negative light, insulted Chinese peasants. Therefore, China, therefore, she was our enemy. And we don't want her to come to China. And during that time, we denounced everything American. So it was nothing, you know, too special about it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came to the United States, it was 1996. I was just giving a reading at the Chicago bookstore on my memoir, Red Azalea.
Mm-hmm.
Afterwards, a lady came up to me. She says, An Chi-min, do you know Paula's book? Before I could answer the question, she says, I just want you to know, Paula's book taught me to love the Chinese people. It hit me because I thought she insulted the Chinese people.
Mm-hmm.
Here this lady told me Paula Buck's book taught her to love Chinese people. And she says, here, it's a gift to you. It was a paperback of The Good Earth. So I went back to the hotel and start reading The Good Earth. It was on the plane from Chicago to Los Angeles. I just couldn't help embarrassing myself, breaking down, sobbing on the airplane. Because I have never known any authors, including my favorite and most respected Chinese authors, who wrote about our peasants the way Paula Buck did, with such admiration, affection, and humanity. It was at that very moment the idea for the book, my book, Pearl of China, was born. And I was determined. I wanted my book to be a celebration of Paula Buck's life. And I wanted to show the role Paula's played mm-hmm. in Chinese history.
Yes.
And also the role that friendship mm-hmm. in surviving the unspeakable mm-hmm. hardship. Because I found that over the years, Paula Buck's love for and faith in Chinese people never changed. No matter how much we denounced her, me included,
mm-hmm.
and vice versa, mm-hmm. the Chinese people, especially in the town of Zhejiang, their faith and love in Paula Buck never changed. And that's something touched me deeply.
That's remarkable. This is going to be a very naive question, but just on the surface of it, it would have seemed that the communist regime would have embraced a work that held up the peasant in such a beautiful way. But was it because Paula Buck was taken in by the propaganda against the communists and in favor of the Kuomintang? Was that what the problem was that Madame Mao had with Paula Buck? Or is it more complicated than that?
I'm so glad you asked this question. I'm so glad you gave me this opportunity. The reasons are very clear. The two reasons. Reason number one, you see, in The Good Earth, the Wang Long and Alan, the peasant couple Probuck portrayed in the communist eyes, in our eyes, are too individual. And the sense of individualism that the two peasants embraced is exactly what Mao did not want us to be aware of. You see, we grew up, I was taught to write Long Live Chairman Mao. I love you, Chairman Mao, before I was taught to write my own name. So we were so brainwashed that it never occurred to us that we belong to ourselves. We own our own life. You see, but in Probuck's, the peasants, they in her novel, they have this little life, a very terrible beginning, but they are working for their own future. They want to add this land and save money, have sons, more land, and acquire a little bit money and save the prosperity. You see, that direction is dangerous, mm-hmm. because if we read it, we will say, we are individual human beings. So that's what composed the threat.
I understand.
Yeah, and yes. I remember when I first was giving birth to my daughter in Chicago, 1991, the first thought after giving birth entered to me was that my daughter does not belong to the Communist Party of China. She belongs to herself. She actually owns her life. What a thrilling thought.
Amazing.
And the second point was that Probuck was to accompany President Nixon to China. Mm-hmm. Her role was a novelist, Nobel Prize-winning novelist, a journalist, and a translator. Because she knows how to speak Mandarin and lots of dialogues in China. Mm-hmm. So she would have been standing in between Mao and Nixon. And Madame Mao would never let Probuck have that spot. Madame Mao was preparing to take over China, to be China's next president after Mao. She would want it. She was craving desperately for that media attention. Yeah. She would never let Probuck grab that. Mm-hmm. And Probuck was so heartbroken when Madame Mao rejected her visa. Probuck's daughter told me, she said, my mother tried every connection all over the world. Anybody she knew, she tried to have them send Madame Mao a message, or anybody, a premature or Mao, to give her the visa. Because it's been 40 years and her parents' grave was in China. She wanted so desperate to return. And her request was declined. And was so heartbroken. And she died the next year.
Oh.
You see, Nixon visited China in 1972. Probuck died 1973. So you can see how important for me and to go to Probuck's home. Madame Mao rejected her visa. And here I am with my daughter, my family, to honor that request. And we wanted to bring the sound, the peasant opera of something that Probuck grew up with, and to her spirit, and also Chinese people's love.
Rosemary Manchester, and you're listening to my conversation with novelist An Chi Min, who's talking about her life in China, her discovery of the work of Probuck, of reading The Good Earth. How long has it been since you've read The Good Earth?
I hope you'll be inspired by An Chi Min to read it, or reread it if perhaps you've never read it, and then to follow up by reading An Chi Min's book about Pearl of China. And all this is possible because our members out there donate to KRCB so that we can bring you programs about books. And Suzanne Lang and I are in the studio now, and we're so happy to tell you what it means to us to have your support so that we can do this work, which we love.
And you can give us a call right now at 584-2020. And it's a great way to not only show us, but to show the station that this is a program in particular, but the type of programming in a broad way that you enjoy listening to and derive some value from. And so give us a call at 584-2020 and be as passionate as listening to Anchi Min talk about moving through all of this. She's such a passionate, emotional person, yet strong and directed.
And she writes like a dream. You're going to love reading her work. And I think that if you read Pearl of China, you'll want to read her other books, Red Azalea, Madame Mao, and her other books about the Chinese empresses.
Well, we're going to get back to another segment of Rosemary and Anchi Min in their conversation that they had here in the studio a while ago. But first, we'd really love to hear from you, 584-2020, and pledge your support to KRCB. There's lots of wonderful premium gifts that we have for you, including at the $60 level, two tickets to a performance of the National Theater from London that is presented at the Rialto. And I know Rosemary and I are big fans of that venue. So if you haven't experienced something live in HD at the Rialto, I know that will be a treat for you.
Mm-hmm. And Suzanne and I volunteer here at the station and for our work. And so we urge you to support the station so that we can continue to do this. It's a unique program. Not many public radio stations have a literary program regularly, and it's part of the uniqueness of KRCB, and it's part of what gives value to you as listeners. So please give us your financial support.
584-2020 is the number for you to call and pledge your support right now for A Novel Idea and for all the programming on KRCB. And we're going to get back to that conversation, Rosemary Manchester and Anchi Min.
When you were a very young woman, scarcely more than a teenager, you were sent to work on a farm, and our readers who've read Red Azalea and Becoming Madame Mao will know this, but for the people out there who haven't yet read these two books, I'll fill you in a bit. And so Anchi Min herself then was selected to come to Madame Mao's movie production studio to star in a I'll let you take it from here, because I may be mangling the whole story. You were just kind of snatched away from the farm where your life was in danger because you were starving and mistreated, and whisked by Madame Mao's people into the movie studio.
Yes, I was overnight Cinderella in the labor camp.
Oh my goodness.
This is what happened. I was I had a spinal cord injury because I was carrying every day with a manure, 200 pounds of manure with a pole and with two buckets and with a string. The problem was that because it's a commune and nobody take care of the strings, so it's dipped in the manure, and afterwards, after a while, it just, one day I was using it, it snapped. So the 200 pounds of manure, just the buckets just knocked me off, and I fall right into the canal. And I was in a very painful time, because at the labor camp, we're giving no permission for medical, can't see a doctor. And so that day, I was hoeing cottons in the field. And we did not know Madame Mao was trying to make this movie to pave her way, to show the woman leadership. And to, after Mao died, she wanted to be the next president. So she's making this propaganda film featuring a proletarian female with a peasant face. So she was sending scouts all over the nation. And that day, I was in the labor camp, and a group of people in a white van, they come from film studio. And everybody stopped watching. And for me, I was starving, because in the labor camp, if you don't finish work, you don't have dinner. So I thought, everybody stopped, I better catch up. So I was working really hard. And from the talent scout's point of view, I was the only moving creature on the entire horizon. That was how I got spotted. Then I went to the film studio. I met, it's like a Miss USA pageant, you know. But the difference is the measurement. And the one that qualifies has to really, for example, I have to have this callus on my neck where I carry the manure as thick as a portobello mushroom. And with callus on my hands and my fingernail, toenail, the color is like a brown because the fungicide. And these things that qualifies me. And those girls who knows, they are wonderful actors, they got eliminated. Because when you know how to perform and they feel that you have a... You're politically unreliable because you're cultured. You have a culture in the family. You probably read books on that. Yeah. But for me, the only thing I know is to recite Mao poems, Mao quotations, and Madame Mao's opera. So that was, that got me in. But during the film production time, September 9th, Mao died.
Yes.
And October 8th, Madame Mao was arrested and later on sentenced to death.
That quickly.
Yes. And then... Wow. 2 months later, I was denounced as Madame Mao's trash.
Oh, my word.
But all these things that kind of give me opportunity. I remember the moment before I was on the stage and I was in front of the camera. And the next moment, I was under the stage and to be forced to sit there to listen to all these people from prison. That Madame Mao put them in prison. They came out to tell all the stories why they were enemies with Madame Mao. So for me, I got the first-hand material from all these people for my many years later for becoming Madame Mao.
And Chi Minh, you have lived the most amazing life. And of course, you're still a young woman. So that when you think of all the adventures ahead of you. But if that were a work of fiction, people would say, no, couldn't happen.
Right.
But it just shows that our lives are incredible.
Yes.
Especially yours.
Yeah, I think as an author, I was blessed. Although I don't want her to live that kind of life again. If it were my daughter, I would not want her to go through that. For example... No. It's good as a material for Pearl of China that I am familiar with the peasant life. My hands were in manures.
Yes.
And also I, for 17 years when I was growing up, each year I have to spend 5 months to my grandmother's place, which is in the town of Nantong, which is hour and a half drive from Zhenjiang, where Pearl Buck grew up. We're all in the same Jiangsu province. And whatever Pearl Buck described in her book fits my situation. Because, for example, Pearl Buck described that the peasants, the living room during the raining season swelled. And the floor was turned into liquid mud.
Yes.
That was my living room at my grandmother's house.
Goodness.
And my grandmother had a bound feet. So I slept with my grandmother because our bed was so narrow. We can't sleep shoulder by shoulder. If one of us would fall off. So she would sleep on the other side. So I slept with her foot.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked her about bound feet and how painful that was. And after she explained the process of bounding the feet, and she says, "Woman of grass, born to be stepped on." And I said, no, I don't want to. So you see, that kind of gave me the idea to love Communist Party, love Mao. Because I just hate that, the fact of my grandmother's time.
Yes.
And also my grandmother told me, he says, you got to learn to be quiet. You got to learn to hide your broken arm inside your sleeves. And in front of my house, there's the branch of Yangtze River. It's called Tonghe, the River of Tong. It's the river where I drank. I wash my rice, my vegetable, my dishes. Also, it's the river I wash my clothes and my champa pot.
Mm-hmm.
And I swim and play with the boat people's children.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm familiar with the peasant life, and I'm a fisherman. That's why I choose to do the Pearl of China from a Chinese perspective. Because that's my strength.
Yes.
I know exactly what Willow's life.
Yes. And the design, which you came up for the book, to create a friendship.
Yes.
Because that was the way you wanted to portray her life. So you created a character called Willow Yi. The way she and Pearl got to know each other is really funny because Willow was a very poor
a little thief.
Child, and was a thief.
Right.
And she stole
Pearl's father's wallet. Right. And amusing, the Pearl chased her and you tell the story.
Yeah, that's right. She chased her, yeah. And the two just start fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, yeah, that's what village kids do. Because Pearl, she's not a no Western kid.
No,
she was the Chinese. She was just as smart as Willow. She had eyes. She did not want her father to be taken advantage of.
Right. And her, I like the way you brought the characters onto the stage. First, you brought Willow, who's going to be the protagonist and tell the story. But the first person that Willow talks about is Pearl's father, Absalom.
Right.
I love the description of him, and I'm going to read a little bit of that. She said, Absalom Seidenstricker was his name. He was plow-nosed and demon-eyed crazy foreigner. And she wondered, is he a criminal in his own land? Or else, why is he here? He must be a criminal. And then she described his face as a big opium bed with a big nose sitting like a table in the middle, eyebrows like two birds' nests, and clear blue eyes.
Right.
What a wonderful description. And then Absalom was was he a difficult character to write? He wasn't a lovable person in the terms that we think of. He was a fiery evangelist who was committed to converting the Chinese people to Christianity, to his version of Christianity. And then when we meet Pearl's mother, Carrie, who is such a lovely woman, and Absalom is so obsessed with his work that Carrie is really neglected. Mm-hmm. And at this point, they've lost four sons. Four little boys have died. And perhaps it was that Carrie was so exhausted from that she let Pearl kind of run wild.
Right.
And Willow said that she thought Pearl's strength was that she ate what the Chinese people ate.
Right.
Whereas the little boys, the mother had seen to it that they had Western food, and they had butter and milk and things like that. So they couldn't resist the local diseases, and all four of them died. But it just breaks your heart to think of this lovely woman, Carrie, out there. You know, she didn't want to be there.
Right.
It was Absalom's idea to come. Right. And here, four little stones in the graveyard that were the sons that were she wasn't going to be able to raise. And then the two little girls, Pearl and Grace. But I love the way you portrayed Pearl as strong because she was growing up Chinese.
Right. And she so much wanted to have black hair. She asked her nanny, Ama, says, can you help me? How do I turn my hair into black color? And Ama says, well, in China, we just eat more sesame seeds. So she roasted the sesame seeds and Pearl just gobbled it down like crazy. And then when she went home, she had her mouth around her mouth, all sesame seeds. And her mother thought, Carrie thought the daughter was eating ants.
Willow's papa is important in the story too, because he's a very, very clever man, not educated, but very clever. And he realizes that Absalom needs some help. Absalom doesn't have very good Chinese. So papa kind of explains what's going on and embellishes the story of Jesus and makes it more appealing to the Chinese people, and church attendance picks up.
Right. Well, this is two things that made that happen. First was that Papa was, according to Willow and Pearl, the two kids talking.
Yes.
Pearl says to Willow, my father, my dad is a nut and he lived to convert people. And Willow said, my dad is a crook. Because he's a scholar, but he didn't have a job. His family's dying, starving. He has to have a job. Yeah. So eventually he was wandering on the street, trying to find a job, and never got one. And then he found that he can help Probuck's dad, Absalom, to help him to kind of make his American version of Christianity into Chinese. Maybe him. So actually the two just ran into each other and make a power like that.
Yes. And we know from reading lots of stories written by missionaries, that that's the way it worked. Mm-hmm. That if they were lucky, someone like Papa came along and took them in hand and organized them and interpreted for them and invited people in. And the combination of the two leaders built a church.
Right. The other reason was actually Carrie.
Oh,
she
yes.
was not aware of that she was helping
yes.
her husband to mm-hmm. gain the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
To the church numbers.
Right.
What happened was that Absalom, Carrie's husband, Pro's father, couldn't get anybody to sign up. Because Chinese have all these religions, the Buddhists, the Taoism, the Zen, and they just think of this coin a bit crazy. But they let him be. However, Carrie did everything to help the locals, from giving advice, giving medicine, to help people. The sickest people, she just went to help. And then afterwards, she would not take any compensation. The local kept trying to give her, you got to take something, you saved our mm-hmm. lives. Mm-hmm. When she says no, and the local came up with the idea. She said, you know, this woman, her husband needs help. If we sign up with the church, the man's going to get to go to heaven, or he wouldn't. So that would be the best way to repay Carrie.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how they sign up.
Yeah.
But then history has such a twist. And during the Cultural Revolution, the fact that they have the faith to hang on became the reason that sustained them and they survived.
Right.
And my mother was one of them. Mm-hmm. I wished that I could ask her mm-hmm. that she was a hidden Christian. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to know who was her teacher, how she was converted, and why. How her value was, because now I realized I was raised by my mother's value. I only remember this such some details during the Cultural Revolution. I was turning into a monster, and I was denounced Paula's book. I was denounced my own teacher, because the principal told me, if you wanted to serve the mankind, you have to be able to sacrifice. The only way to prove the sacrifice is to denounce, go apart with the people you love. And I remember I was crying. I was crying when I was denouncing my teacher, because she gave me the book, The Little Mermaid. I just couldn't bring myself to do it, and I was collapsing, but eventually I got through, coming back with a certificate of Mao's best child, given by the principal of the school, and I gave it to my mother. I expect her to hang on the wall. My mother didn't. Instead, she says, Auntie, if you dare to do that again, I will disown you. And I thought my mother was weird. And the other incident was one night, in the middle of the night, and I stumbled over my mother in the dark, and she was on her knees. Now I realize she must be praying to stop me from turning into a monster.
You know, you're the only one who could possibly have written this story. I mean, the incredible deprivation and danger that you've lived through in your life equipped you to write the story of Pearl Buck. You have the insight and the understanding which you bring to this wonderful writing and tell Pearl Buck's story.
Thank you so much. I think that I do have the insight, because I think where it's urgent mm-hmm. for Americans to understand why China is where it is today.
Exactly.
Because I think that I can help with that education. I wanted to make my book entertaining. I also want you to walk away with solid knowledge of Chinese history.
Wow.
And indeed, she does. Her book is entertaining and has solid knowledge of Chinese history. And Chi Minh is such a delight. This is Rosemary Manchester, your host for A Novel Idea. And you're listening to my interview with Chi Minh. And it's such a privilege for Suzanne and me to bring these programs to you. And we volunteer here at the station. We love what we do. And you who are members of the station make it possible because you contribute to the station so that the expenses of putting on these programs can be met. And it's really unique of particularly of small public radio stations to have a literary component in our programming. And one of the things I love about Novel Idea is that it gives us time to explore in depth and to talk with the authors. And Suzanne and I hear this from the writers when they find out that we're going to have an hour to talk about the book. They are so pleased because we can really get into it in some depth, as you see here with the things that we're learning about Ann Chi Minh.
Yes, Rosemary, I when I am arranging these interviews, I never call them interviews. I always call them conversations, and because that is indeed what you do have with people, and I think it's a interesting way of exploring their work, and that they can express, as you could hear in this interview or conversation today with Ann Chi Minh, that she's interweaving, that both you, Rosemary, and Ann Chi Minh are interweaving the personal narrative, her personal narrative, into her work, and what insight that gives us about her as the author and her work as well. So we're involved, in a way, in a conversation with you, our listeners, and we want it to be two-way. And we come in and we're providing you a show every month, and hopefully you will come to us with your pledge of support and become a member of the station, at, really at any level that you can give. 584-2020 is the number to call, and let us know that you support this level of literary programming here on KRCB.
Mm-hmm. And those of you who are already members, we thank you so much for your membership, and hope that you will continue to give your support to the station.
584-2020 is the number to call, but now we're going to get back to that conversation. Rosemary Manchester and Ann Chi Minh.
It's fortuitous that several months ago, one of the book clubs I belong to devoted ourselves to Pearl Buck for a month. And we read The Good Earth, of course, and I read her autobiography, My Several Worlds. And then we read, she was so prolific. Yes. She wrote so many books. And I read one of her books that wasn't particularly interesting. It was her attempt to write a contemporary book about a contemporary couple in New England. And I thought, well, good for her that she took a crack at that. You know, she was a writer and she wrote about all kinds of different things. But in the last part of the book, Willow finally gets to go to America. Mm-hmm. And she goes to Pearl Buck's home in near Philadelphia, where you're going to be very soon. Have you been to the home before?
Yes.
You have?
Okay. Actually, that Willow part was my own experience. I went there unannounced. So how do you say, anonymous?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So I went there the first time. Yes. And I actually got rejected by the lady at the door. She says, the tour is over. And they're already starting, so you're too late. And I figured later on the curator and the foundation folks told me that if only you announce your name, we are your fans, because
yes.
they love my other books, because they're into China.
Of course.
But I figured that I just wanted to come in as Willow.
Yes.
As nobody.
Yes.
So I say, okay. I say, can you tell me where the grave is?
Yeah.
Actually, that was something important to me, because Willow is not here to visit the house.
Right.
Willow's here, carry the dirt from Zhenjiang to visit the grave.
Yes.
So the lady says, well, you can go that way, go that way. So I went. It was in the dusk, and the sky was getting darker, darker, and I got lost. So I end up back to the inn, which is called the Stone Ridge Inn. So I talked to the innkeeper. I said, it's totally dark, too late now. And I said, I didn't find the grave. And she says, oh, it's easy to miss because it's Probuck's design. She did not want to make a sign says, I'm laying here. So she says, you go tomorrow during the day.
Yes.
Follow the creek. Oh, that sounds to me, it's like a very Chinese idea. Yes, you have the... You have the creek leading you to somewhere. It's like Chinese paintings, very beautiful idea. So I got up, I set up my alarm clock, get up at 4:30, and get myself ready, and wait until 5:15. I start out, and there was nobody there, no car there, not a sound. I went approach to the bug house, and I heard the creek, so I followed the creek. And winding into the land a little bit, and here is a garden. And I saw the sycamore, the pine tree, and some very Chinese kind of, you know, setting. And then, before I knew it, the grave was there. And I saw the grave, I collapsed, because there was nothing on the grave carved on it. There is only three big Chinese character.
Oh, tell about
Sai
those three
Zhen
characters.
Zhu.
Yes.
It's her Chinese name.
Yes.
Buck.
And
Probuck.
Right.
And the Chinese name is like, if it's American, you're American, you come, you don't know what that is.
Right.
And she actually did not care that you know me or not. She actually wrote this thing only a Chinese can recognize, almost as like she's waiting for Willow. Because only Willow can know this is the name her best friend, she's familiar with. And for me, it just hit me emotionally. I just, you know, I get to touch that stone.
Yes.
It's just so thrilling. It's a feeling that I finally was able to let out. And I didn't control myself.
No.
I just let it invite the spirits. Yes. Let it come in and let it embrace me.
At the very end of the book, you end with a letter which Willow has prepared. It's really a letter to Pearl, although Pearl is gone. And
also the last poetry.
The last.
Can I read it?
The last poetry. Yes.
That's Pearlbuck's favorite, and also Willow's favorite, and it just summers their friendship.
Did you do the translation in English?
Yes, I did.
That is, when I read that, I bet she translated that, because you have the meter and the rhyme, and knowing you from this hour, I'm sure that you preserved the soul of that poem.
Oh, you're talking about writing.
Yes.
Probuck wrote in English, thinking in Chinese.
Oh, she did the...
I thought I was the only one, and that's something shared. Of that kind of, she had 40 years in China, 40 years in America, and I had 27 years in China, 26 years in America. I was just beginning to understand Probuck as an author.
I see. Yeah, but I want to read the last paragraph in the book. It's part of Willow's letter to Pearl. Right after the poem, and Willow says, "The creek is singing a happy song. The wind whispers like our old conversations through trembling leaves. The air is pure and the sun warm. Once again, I see you running toward me with sunshine in your face. You look like a jumping cloud in your indigo floral Chinese dress, your golden hair bouncing. Willow, I hear you call. Hurry up. The popcorn man is here." And that's the end of the book. What a beautiful ending.
I'm Suzanne Lang. I'm here with Rosemary Manchester, who you just heard reading from An Chi Min's latest book.
I think it's one of my favorites. Her An Chi Min, of course, is irresistible and so talented. I mean, her writing is exceptional. But to hear her tell her story. And her connection with Pearl Buck and her devotion to the work of Pearl Buck and her desire to preserve it. Pearl Buck's work has kind of
gone out of fashion here in the United States. We used to have it in the curriculum, and somehow it's disappeared from that. And
well, maybe it's time for it to come back. As An Ji-min told us,
yes,
it's important for us to know about China. And we're going to just take a short break right now because we have one more segment of An Ji-min reading from her book, and she sings a little bit more for us. But just wanted to remind you, this is a time for you to give a call to the station at 584-2020 and let the station know, let Rosemary know, and let me know that you support literary programming here on KRCB. 584-2020 is the number to call.
The poem is the Tang Dynasty poem, because I wrote this because my writing is very much influenced, as you can see, by the ancient classic Chinese poems, especially Tang Dynasty poem and Song Dynasty verses.
Mm-hmm.
I love that compressed, structure and the emotional intensity.
Yes, and the everything, yes, beautiful. So read it for us. Yes.
I have brought you favorite Tang Dynasty poem, the tune of Pu Sha Man. Yangtze River ought to be changed to Pacific Ocean, but I leave it the way it is. I know you always prefer the original. I live by the Yangtze River near its source, while you reside farthest down its course. You and I drink water out of the same stream. I haven't seen you, though daily of you I dream. When will this river water cease to run? When shall I not love you the way I do? I only wish our two hearts would be as one, and you wouldn't disappoint me in my love for you.
Beautiful.
That poem was created 960 A.D.,
And we still have it.
Yes, it's still so strong. Yeah. It feels so fit. Uh-huh. Yes.
There's a lot of poetry in this book. Beautiful poetry. Did you write some of it?
Yeah, well, I kind of, I translated in a way that the American can understand.
Yes.
Especially when there's one paragraph when the two children went to a wedding ceremony.
Yes.
Let me get the book.
Okay.
Imagine this. Probuck as this 7-year-old, blonde-haired, blue-eyed girl, and coming and talking in native Chinese, says, "My name is Pro. It's very peasant tone, the dialogue. And then she opened her mouth with the peasant opera, the tune called Huang Mei Tune. It's a, lyrics is very peasant. It says, look at the pair of birds on a tree. What are they doing? They're singing each other love tunes. And it sounds like, Shu shang di niu er, chen shuang dui. Imagine Probuck, the little girl, singing that. It just fascinates me. So here is their children talking to each other. Before that, they probe did something that saved the locals, and will also Absalom, the father, was giving a remark on it. Well, let us have no doubt that God sent Pro to save you, Absalom said to Carpenter Chang and Lelik. My daughter is no angel, but she is a good Christian. Later, Pro told me that she didn't like what her father said, although she was happy that the trick worked. I'm sure your father loves you, I comforted my friend. Pro shook her head. To tell you the truth, I'm jealous of whom he baptizes. He offers affection to strangers, to you, to Nai Nai, to your papa, Carpenter Chang, Lilac, and almost everyone in the town. He will never spare affection for his own children. He's always cold with me. Absalom loves you, Pro. I don't feel it. My mother doesn't feel his love either. Absalom shuts himself in the study so that he can be with God without any distraction. Your father is proud of you, or he wouldn't say that you were a good Christian. Absalom cares about Chinese people so much that he's willing to risk his life for them. In the meantime, he believes that they are heathens and he is their superior. He lives to convert people. He even wants a chance with the warlords. Absalom wants to convert Pumpkin Emperor, General Lobster, and General Crab? I laughed. Yes, and their fish wives and shrimp siblings and snail concubines. That's impossible. Oh, yes. God works miracles. Ha, ha, ha. My papa will believe whoever saves his ass. My father is a nut and your father is a crook. We laughed and put our fathers out of our minds. We walked to the outskirts of town where someone was getting married. We joined the children who had been invited to the wedding to help inspire fertility. We were giving nuts and seeds to throw at the new couple. The groom was a young peasant who was already drunk. He meant to thank the guests, but instead he threw up. The bride was dressed in a bright red embroidered costume. Her face was covered with a piece of silk. Pearl and I admired the costume and the bride's glittering hair ornament. When the band started the wedding song, we joined in. Buddha sits on a lotus pad, beautiful fingers orchid-like. Sun goes down and the moon comes up. May your life be peaceful and tranquil. Mud walls and straw pillows, fruits, seeds, and many suns. Happiness and longevity. May you have the spring and all its fair weather.
Oh, thank you so much, An Chi Min. That was wonderful.
Yeah. I translate that. I want to keep the pleasant flavor.
You did.
Yeah, because did. When other scholars translate, they try to turn it into really classic something.
Yes.
Does not have this kind of almost rapper like.
Yes. Yes. No, I marveled.
I kept that tune. I thought it was.
Yes, it was. And then their voices changed as they matured and grew older. I mean, your writing was always appropriate to the age that that you were reflecting, and that's not easy to do.
Right, especially after the two women, especially Willow, fall in love with this man, but the man was interested in Pearl, not Willow,
yes.
and that the conflict.
I know.
But it's so beautiful.
It's so beautiful. I know. Mm-hmm. So sad and so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you, An Chi Min, for being so generous with your time and thank you for writing these wonderful books, especially your most recent book, to bring Pearl Buck back to our attention.
Thank you.
And so we come to the end of another novel idea, a most exceptional interview with a wonderful writer, An Chi Min. And I hope you'll get to your favorite independent bookstore and get your hands on a copy of Pearl of China. Next month, we're going to have an interview with Jan Martel on his new book, Beatrice and Virgil. An exceptional book and a wonderful opportunity with another great author.
So stay tuned. Stay tuned. Connections is up next. But again, if you support literary programming and A Novel Idea on KRCB, please give us a call at 584-2020 and let the station know and let Rosemary know, let me know. And I think you'll feel good when you make that call. It's a pleasure for us to bring you the programs we do, and we'll be back again next month. And remember,
there's no such thing as too many books.